Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps of all the shows we love and love to hate. From TLC to MTV, A&E to Bravo and more, no show is off limits to the truth as I see it, all from the couch just like you. I'm Jody, your inner voice and best friend who says all the things you're thinking, but you have the manners to never say aloud. Be sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss a week, and find me everywhere at Reality TV Pod. Support the show and score some amazing perks and merch, as well as some bonus episodes at patreon.com/realitytvpod. Now sit back, it's time to get salty. Hi, hello there. Welcome back and welcome to March. It's a new month. Hopefully we are taking little baby steps towards spring. This weekend, I have to tell you what I did. I went on this little re-energizing creativity, relaxation, refresh retreat downtown Chicago, and it was quite an experience. I am going to be talking about it on my Patreon this week. I went with a friend who did my improv class with me. We had a lot of fun. I learned a lot of things. And I also learned, you know, I am pretty comfortable never dancing or taking a creative movement class. Like I said, I'll talk more about it on my Patreon because it was pretty damn embarrassing. But the reason I bring that up is because this weekend I really just unplugged. I did not watch any TV. I did not read the news. I have no idea what is going on in People magazine this week, and it's a little worrisome for me. I feel like I am on a completely different planet. So I apologize for not knowing what's going on with celebrities, besides the fact that Luke Perry died. Very sad. But I do know about 60 days in. So last week and the week before, we left off with, oh, and this is going to be spoiler alert, David, who is a police officer, he told a PO he was an undercover cop doing this show 60 days in, and now he has just gone and fucked it all up. He's kind of going the route of Anjali. Remember her? She was a few seasons ago. She found a girlfriend in there and told the girlfriend. They both do this thing where once they are found out and production is like, what the fuck? Didn't we go through all this training and tell you, don't tell anyone, just stick to your cover story. What they ended up doing is they doubled down saying they didn't do anything wrong. I didn't put anyone else in danger. This is just crazy. You know, at that point when it is so obvious that you just messed up, don't be a kid about it. Just apologize and admit that you fucked up. Now, Abner is also in hot water, again, because of David. He ran his mouth to this inmate, and now I'm forgetting his name. It was the kid who switched from like 300 to 100 pod, then he went back to 300. Well, in any event, David told this guy, oh yeah, I know Abner. I know him from the East Coast back in the day. No, you don't do that. So now Abner is about to get his ass beat. I think he gave a signal like, oh, my shoulder is sore or something like that. I've said this before and I will say it over and over again. You have got to watch this show. I love it, but I gotta say, I think it's gonna be hard for 60 Days In to continue after the season because everyone knows about the show. Inmates have seen it, POs have seen it. I'm talking about all across the US. So they're gonna have to figure out how to keep it going, even if it's not in a jail or a prison setting. I know they did it with Undercover High in high school, but I don't know, it just wasn't the same. I did watch Undercover High, but I don't know. I like something where I'm terrified to watch it, but I also feel like I'm an insider, like I know prison culture, and I clearly do not, unless, you know, we're talking Love After Lockup or something. I don't know, maybe they have to do like a sober house with Dr. Drew. Remember that incredible show? It's got to be like a sober house meets 60 Days In. I don't know how you would do that with HIPAA laws, but I don't know. Someone over at A&E, figure it out, please. Now, another show that I want to touch base about is the one and only Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Erica, I liked you. I really, really, really liked you the first season, but now you are just too damn much. When she was talking about the other women not wanting to get their hair wet in the ocean because she thinks it's just so crazy. Oh my God, it's just hair, ladies. Okay, Erica. She was the only one who was like leaning over at a 45 degree angle, wringing her hair out like it was I don't know, in a Woolite commercial or something. You care, Erica. You care a lot. And Lisa Vanderpump, finally, she is getting an honest edit, or as honest as it could be. That master manipulator side is finally showing. And I'm saying this because I am probably going to get a lot of shit for saying this, but I've never been a real big fan of Lisa Vanderpump. I just think she's really condescending. I don't think her jokes are that funny. I mean, she has some funny one-liners, and yes, there's something to British humor, but overall, I just think she's completely lost touch with what she's supposed to be doing on the show. I mean, we all want a storyline. We want drama and all that kind of stuff. That's what makes the show so good. But it's just gotten to a point where I don't know if it's that she's trying too hard or what she's doing is so dirty and also so obvious that it just takes the spark away. I don't know, like New York feels like genuine drama. It's all stirred up drama, but the emotions behind it are real, or real enough for me. I'll just leave it at that. Besides Vanderpump, oh, obviously Dorit. I mean, she just continues to look like an idiot every season. And I'm not just talking about the weird curly hair kind of thing. It really looks like my hair when it air dries and I just throw it up in a ponytail. It's not a good look. And she's just so fucking delusional. It's amazing. Also amazing was this week's episode of Love After Lockup. Last week's episode, I think it kind of sucked. It was a throwaway episode, but this week, oh, it renewed my love, much like many of these people need to renew their probation status. Now let's start off with Matt and Caitlin, and this is going to shock you. So if you need to pull over on the side of the road, maybe sit down, take a deep breath if you must. Turns out, Matt is a dick. He's an asshole. I know, shocking. You never would have thought. He left Caitlin on the frickin' side of the road after that counseling session at the funeral home. It's crazy. I mean, some of the best breakthroughs couples make are after therapy sessions facilitated by an untrained therapist. So weird how that worked out. Well, you know what else is weird? The fact that Caitlin has still never admitted to being married twice before and having a son who I think he's around like 11 or 12 years old. Yes, you heard me correctly. Now, Starcasm had actually reported on this a while ago, I think towards the beginning of the season, but I was holding out thinking, you know, maybe Caitlin will bring it up. I'll give her a chance. I don't want to say anything about her child that she does or doesn't have custody of. We'll see how it all shakes out, but no. Caitlin continues to prance around acting like she's, you know, in her early 20s or 19 years old, and this is her first serious relationship, and she's just so mature for her age, and she doesn't understand why Matt's acting this way. I am so freaking tired of it. She should not be talking shit about Matt being irresponsible when she herself hasn't paid child support for her own son, who apparently she hasn't seen for over a year. Or at least this was what I read in Starcasm. If I am misquoting it, I apologize, but that is the general idea of it. So yeah, I guess I am judging her because I feel badly for her son. It sucks that she lost her mom, and it's tragic and it's sad. However, instead of thinking how much you miss your mom, maybe Caitlin should channel some of that empathy for her own son who has a mother who is alive, who just doesn't bother to see him or provide for him. I am sure I'm going to get some crap for this. I'm probably going to get a lot of shit for this episode, actually. But you know what? It's not about Caitlin placing her son with another family for me or whether he's living with his dad. It's not about Caitlin being the primary parent or not at all. To me, I just see a hypocrisy and a selfishness about having a child and not paying child support or making an effort to see him, even the smallest effort. If you think about it, Caitlin had all the time in the world to call and write and visit Matt a few times. She was even calling and visiting his mom. So why could she not do that for her own son? Okay, moving on before my head explodes. Oh, sorry, I can't, because Caitlin is a fucking garbage person, and I mean a literal garbage person. Her hotel room looked like she raided the goddamn hotel dumpster. I counted 3 pizza boxes, at least 3 coffee cups, a bag of fucking Lay's potato chips. Lay's. not even ruffles with some French onion dip or even a flavored chip. Fucking plain Lay's. And of course, on top of all of that, she's naturally freaking skinny. So it was even more reason for me to get all upset. This all goes along with the whole hypocrisy that is Caitlin. Call everyone else irresponsible, and here you are being an irresponsible and disrespectful freaking slob. She is the reason I have black light enabled eyes. She's the reason you don't touch blankets or throw pills at a hotel. And she is certainly the reason you don't touch remotes or sit on accent chairs because there's been nasty ass pizza sauce tossed on them. I'd rather live my life as the original John Travolta Bubble Boy. Remember that movie? I'd rather live the rest of my life like that than to stay in hotel rooms that Caitlin has stayed in, or Caitlin adjacent. People like Caitlin. You know what? Actually, that's what I'm just going to call people who are fucking slobs from now on. Caitlins. She's a real Caitlin. Apologies to all of you nice Caitlins out there. Hopefully you know where I'm coming from. It's coming from a good place, you guys. Okay. Then we left off. Ring, ring, ring. Guess what? Matt's in jail. Real cliffhanger there. Now let's talk about Meghan, Michael, and Sarah. So today I'm going to go visit Mike in prison. I'm really excited, and I got this new blush that I'm trying out because I think it'll remind him about my naturally flushed cheeks when he de-virginized me because I had sex. I'm not a virgin anymore. Mike took my virginity. You should have been there. My undies felt just like Niagara. Okay, Meghan, we get it. You're having sex, and he loves your eyes. Sure, girl. Now, holy CrossFit friend, she better be getting a paycheck for this show because I tell you, she sure makes it for me. And I would bet money on her being more pissed about her CrossFit gym box or whatever they call it, not letting her film there so she had to use that gross apartment gym, than Sarah was about Michael cheating. I was really disappointed we didn't get to see the actual moment where Sarah found out, because I think she said something like Michael's parole officer's partner told the parole partner to tell her. I don't know. It was just really messed up, but she's just filling in CrossFit, what's going down, the pictures that she saw. She knows what Michael and this Meghan chick have been up to. Then Michael calls and Sarah quickly changes accents and demands Michael tell her about Niagara Falls. Over and over, Sarah asks him if he was with Meghan. And again, she asks him if he loves Meghan. He does not even come close to answering her any of the times, but nevertheless, she persisted, and Sarah never stops questioning him. It's obvious she doesn't want to actually cut him out of her life, despite her saying over and over again, I promise you, you'll never speak to me again. She just wants Michael to spill his soul and screams that he loves her, and I don't blame her because she has a lot riding on this relationship with him. You know, they're married, they have 1.5 children together, and oh yeah, that's where she just throws out, and I'm pregnant, and that's just about the time CrossFit grabs the phone and hangs up. Now, you know what I was thinking here, as I'm sure all of you were, because we are all one. Where one go, we all go, or whatever the hell Cody Brown says. I was really, really envying everyone who has an apartment in that complex that overlooks the pool, because I would be at my patio door, crouched down, of course, so they couldn't see me. I'd have a cup of coffee. I may have a notebook and pen, but more than likely, I'd probably be live tweeting or reporting like a Facebook thread of everything going down. What I would freaking give for this kind of drama right in my backyard. Oh, where were we? Oh, okay. So we leave off once again. What the fuck? Waiting for Sarah to confront Meghan at the hotel lobby. Meghan doesn't even know what Sarah knows, right? She was just informed, hey, Sarah, the baby mama, is coming over because she just wants to give you some additional information. Now, we all know it is going to be a lot more than just a little informational session. Shit is going to go down, and I don't even know how WeTV would pull off another week with stringing us along, so let's just buckle down the hatches or whatever the hell that phrase is and get ready for it next week. In the meantime, welcome to New Mexico, land of enchantment and goddesses. I'm really sorry you got to deal with Clint as a resident in New Mexico. I really am. I mean, Clint's own parents can't even stand the shit that he is putting them through with his mysterious facial abrasions. I can only imagine the toll that Clint has put on the state. I mean, moping around, he's yelling at large buildings all the time. It's a lot. So sorry. So sorry. I would like to say maybe we can send him to, oh, I don't know, Florida always seems to be a good option. But then, oh God, who do we have in Florida? Jesus Christ, like a Nicole from 90 Day Fiancé. Can you imagine those two together? Maybe we just start a whole new island, like a 90 Day Fiancé Love After Lockup Island. It'll be the new Australia, I guess. Okay, where the fuck was I? I'm just getting lost in this dream of a Sharp Entertainment Island. Maybe we just call it Sharp Island or Dull Island because everyone is not too bright, not too sharp, not the sharpest tool in the shed. Where the fuck am I going? Okay, let's just jump to Clint's mother here. Man, Mother Clint, I just want to start a GoFundMe for like a really good, maybe a microdermabrasion or just a really hydrating facial, something like that. I mean, it's all Clint. It's not her fault. It's living a life of being Clint's parent. I mean, what the hell do you do? I normally fault the parents for raising children to become humans like Clint, but I mean, really, what do? You have one child. You poured your heart, your soul, all of the net profits from Kendall's Kitchen into this boy. And now they're a grown man sitting on your lovely couch, stroking your lovely white furry pillow that he's probably stinking up. And he's sitting there saying, I'm in love with a Tracy. I mean, there's no adjectives created in the English language to even describe the type of person Tracy is, or at least I don't know of it. And I guess I should be thankful for that. I don't know anyone like Tracy, nor do I want to. But Mother and Father Clint, I mean, they're not completely blameless either because they cannot honestly believe that Clint doesn't go out and party like Tracy did. I mean, come the fuck on. Look at his face. Look at his eyes. Clint is giving like a Ryan Edwards filter. Like, you know, the missing and endangered kids artist where they age progress them. It's like Ryan Edwards had an artist do that and we're at Clint. You can't be so blind to that shit anymore. We didn't get to see Clint for most of this episode after that, except for a poorly lit scene right towards the end of the episode. Not much happened in the scene, but a lot happened in the scene, if that makes any sense. So Clint is talking to Tracy on the phone outside his parents' house, and Tracy asks, am I on speaker? Is your mom listening? Because, you know, she's got some classic brainwashing to do. The typical, your family is against me. They want you to be unhappy. They don't want us together. They think I'm using you. I'm not using you. You know that, right? Do you think I'm using you? Well, Clint gets pissed off at some point and throws his phone. Again, he freaking loves the throwing the phone bullshit. And then somehow the phone ends up in the back of his truck and it rings. He picks it up and it's Tracy, who's now mad at him because he hung up on her. And she keeps asking him, do you want to end it? Do you want to end it? And Clint, Jesus Christ, I mean, talk about an ugly cry. He was hitting, what is soprano, the highest? Only Farrah Abraham could mimic him. I mean, the high-pitched, ugly cry, it was bad. So he says it's over and throws his phone, but then he says to the crew, and he's screaming, so his mom comes out because, you know, she's worried about the neighbors listening to her toddler throw a temper tantrum. He says Tracy ended it. She broke up with him, and everyone's wish came true. I don't get what happened. Did we not hear her side of the phone call? Or is he playing freaking mind games too? I was embarrassed for Clint. His behavior was, it's something I would never have put up with even when my kids were toddlers. It's more embarrassing than anything we've seen him do. And I mean, Jesus Christ, he got married at a country bar officiated by the Thursday night DJ. So just know it was bad. All right, Lizzie and Scott. Well, obviously, we have to address the prison pie in the room first. I didn't catch the entire recipe, if you will, but I did see a shit ton of coffee creamer, like the powdered kind. Then she was scraping out cream from inside generic Oreos. I was already disgusted, and I was annoyed at the simple fact. Lizzie could have bought or made an actual cake or an actual cheesecake or pie or whatever the hell she's attempting to make a hack of. I mean, what she spent on the ingredients alone. She had quite a few bags of groceries there for this stupid thing. Or maybe there was a nutty bar. Was that what Scott was playing with? Like a nutty bar and a couple lone caramels? Now I'm going to get shit for saying caramel instead of caramel. It's caramel, people. Make a poll for it. It's caramel. Anyhow, she could have bought two pies for what she spent on the ingredients alone. She's so fucking stupid, or at least stupid in that aspect. She's pretty damn smart in the way she manipulates Scott, though. Somehow she got him to demand that he does not want sex. No sex, none, never. I don't know what you're talking about. But now we're not just talking about sex. We're not talking about little shifty eyeballs, who's looking down, who's looking up. What we're really talking about is Scott hiding the fact that he is broke and soon they will just be dreaming about the days when they could afford that yummy prison pie. Now then we get a commercial break and we learn that apparently Lizzie has a very voluptuous mons pubis area because she can conceal flip phones, iPhones, probably some pagers, iPads. I mean, anything at all that you can get cellular data on. She just, you know, tucks it right in front and bam, she can make it rain 80 grand behind bars. I mean, what the fuck? This woman is freaking crazy. And I know way too much about all of her different orifices. Okay, Brittany and Marcelino. Well, we know about one of Brittany's orifices because she's knocked up with Marcelino. I'm really, really pissed off, honestly, with these two because, once again, I'm going to quote some sarcasm information here. Marcelino was apparently married for 19 years. He was even married at the time that Brittany and he had a marriage ceremony. Turns out, you know, they didn't file the legal documents until after Marcelino filed for an annulment. And let me explain this. Okay, so this first wife, this is so confusing. The first wife that he was married to for 19 years was going to be annulled because Marcelino went and filed for an annulment, checked the box that said the reason that it would be considered an annulment and not a divorce was because they were too closely related by blood to be married. I know, what the fuck? I don't know. Go ahead and search it for yourself. There might be new details that have come out by the time that you're listening to this, but it doesn't really matter because I feel fucking duped and I completely trust everything that Sarcasm puts out because they really dig deep, like dig way deeper than I have the ability to. Maybe that should be like my next goal. Just get, I don't know, like a PI degree and go work for Sarcasm. Anyhow, yeah, I'm pissed off because I was really rooting for Brittany. I liked her. I trusted her. And now I just feel like one of Lizzie's tricks. Maybe you're going to slap your knee here because speaking of tricks, Marcelino and Brittany go downtown Vegas and oh my God, what is this? A magician on the street. Wow. Turns out he pulls a fast one on Brittany and Mr. Magician helps Marcelino propose. Now, there are many reasons why I did not like this, not just because everything about Marcelino makes me cringe, but also because magicians creep me the fuck out. I've had some bad experiences. I don't want to talk about it. Don't ask me. I just never trust a magician or someone who aspires to be a magician. And then we got to just quickly touch on this ring box with the light. I mean, really, what the fuck is that? What is this, like a QVC, your elderly neighbor found a great purse and she thinks you should have one. You know, you can find everything inside because a light goes on when you open it. Just stop it. Not everything needs an organization system. Yeah, this is coming from me. Not everything needs a light. Not everything needs those stupid unicorn sequins that flip this way or that way. Just enough, people. Okay, well, that's enough of love after lockup. Stick around after the break, and we'll be coming up with some sister wives and seeking sister wife. Listen, you all know me by now and know that mental health is as important to me as making sure I'm healthy and recording all my Housewives episodes. But for real, there's no shame in my game that I have anxiety that, like many of you, I just can't wish away on my own. If there's something that prevents you from finding a sense of control or peace, or even achieving your personal professional goals, I have an incredible resource for you. I've partnered with BetterHelp, who provides online counseling that's there for you as often as you need it. I registered myself the other day, and I was almost instantly matched with a professional counselor that met the criteria I indicated was important to me. And what a bonus that is when you can't find a local therapist. It can be difficult to find a professional that you click with, not to mention who has office hours when you can make it. I mean, who's got the time to take 2 hours out in the middle of the day to go to an appointment? But I can tell you from experience, it is essential. Connecting with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment is not only convenient to you, but it's a gift you're giving yourself and the people around you. BetterHelp gives you the choice of scheduling secured video or phone sessions. Plus, you can chat and text with your therapist. If your friends don't understand your frustration over 90 Day Fiancé, at least you have your therapist to text now. But seriously, if you're dealing with depression, grief, anxiety, trauma, or even LGBT matters, everything you share is confidential. You can even receive couples counseling, which is a huge benefit. It is damn near impossible to schedule those appointments between work, kids, schedules, and who wants to pay a babysitter to go to therapy on a date night. Plus, if you are not happy with your counselor for any reason, all you have to do is request a new one at any time, and there's no additional charge. Therapists are available in all 50 states and worldwide, and you can start communicating in less than 24 hours. No waiting to find your weekly appointment spot. Best of all, it is truly an affordable option. Personally, it's less than my insurance copay. RealiTV listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code RealiTV, R-E-A-L-I-T-V. Go to betterhelp.com/RealiTV. Fill out your questionnaire and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/RealiTV. Before I launch into Sister Wives, I just want to say thank you. Thank you to the hundreds, maybe thousands. Hell, you know what? I had a little retreat this weekend. I'm going to manifest it. And I'm going to say tens of thousands of you that refer to Sunday as polygamy night. It really just, polygamy brings us all together, right? It multiplies the love. And for that, thank you. Because if it weren't for all of you, all of us combined together, tuning into TLC Sunday nights, we wouldn't have the polygamy shows we have. So thank you. And with that, let's dive right in. And wow, Cody's hair. Okay, we're going to get to that in just a moment. But first, let's catch up with Cody and Christine, who are back from a restful and sexy home shopping weekend in Flagstaff, Arizona. If you are wondering why I say sexy and emphasize the sex, it's because I will forever be convinced that Cody and Christine have the spiciest sex life of all the marriages. I don't think this has always been the case, but I think the recent, well, I'm going to put my hypothesis on it. I hypothesize that Christine is on some sort of anti-anxiety medications, which I am all for. I just, in fact, upped my own anti-anxiety prescription. Christine is just loving life, okay? She may or may not be on some meds, but she's just making the most of every moment. And I love that. I love the new 2018-19 Christine. Besides just the upbeat optimism that she has these days, she seems to be the most affectionate one with Cody. She's always calling him love. She talks about how she loves romance. And, you know, she even allowed Tony to bash her daughter's head in with a bat on her wedding day. Sure, it was a piñata, but the horror was all the same. And still, there was a silver lining for Christine. Now, speaking of horror, let's talk about Cody's hair once again. I'd say his hair is taking front and center, but it hasn't seen the front of his head in a few years, and his hair exclusively lives in the center of his head right now. The rate of recession his hair is experiencing seems to be, go with me here, this is just purely scientific fact, you guys. It's nothing about me and my opinion. The rate of recession seems to be in correlation to Mary's use of the word catfish. I'm just saying. Now, even my own husband, who cannot stand this show or any polygamy shows, he thinks they're all the same. And I mean, really, is there a quicker way just to stab me in the heart than say they all look alike and it's all the same thing? No. Anyhow, he walked in, looked at Cody's hair, and in all seriousness, because Dave is pretty much always serious, we're kind of like a yin and yang couple, he asked if Cody's new hair was inspired by Last of the Mohicans. No offense to the Mohicans, but I think he was actually spot on. Okay, so let's talk about this episode. Basically, all the wives, Cody and two of Christine's daughters, they're sitting down to talk about Flagstaff. Are they going to move there or are they not? Spoiler alert, this is the whole fucking episode. Janelle is really the only one who is still unsure about this move, but that changes later. I don't know, it's really weird. But Christine and Robin, they're all in. Mary is kind of like the Erica Jane, because how many fucks does she give? None. And then before we know it, Cody's own PowerPoint presentation has gone to fucking hell, because it turns out this move makes zero financial sense, but they're going to go anyway because Cody finds it, quote, yummy. Oh, I mean, what the fuck? I don't think there is any time ever I want to hear a grown man use the word yummy. To quote Pam Beasley, not now, not then, not now, not ever. No. Now, fast forward a bit through Cody's stump speech on plural marriage and the family's not felons brigade. And okay, whatever. We got to talk about Mona. Remember Mona the realtor, aka Mona Reiki? I was so excited to see her. I had forgotten what her last name was. And I pulled up Google faster than Cody ran around the cul-de-sac when they first purchased it. I wish I could bring you information about how, okay, I had a little theory here. Just bear with me. I thought maybe Mona changed her last name to Reiki to make herself sound like she's this really new age realtor, like she's really in tune with the universe's energy and that helps her buy and sell houses that are perfect for her clients. But turns out Reiki, her last name, has like a whole different spelling, like an I before E thing, and I fucked it all up. But I'm just gonna say, missed opportunity, if you ask me. All right, change the spelling. It'll open some doors for you. Meditate on that. Okay, so Mona comes over to Christine's house, and she is maybe like 18 inches into the doorway, and Cody and Christine launch into this vaudeville act of who's on Flagstaff, who's on Vegas, are they going to sell, when are they going to list, how long before it sells. It's fucking ridiculous. I mean, I was praying for Tony in this moment, like the good old days when Tony was bitching about Mexican hot chocolate. I would do anything to watch 2 hours of that at this point. Jesus fucking Christ, enough of the Flagstaff saga. Am I the only one? Okay. All right. So Mona's at the house and she's got to want the Browns out of there more than anyone because she did not waste any time in telling them, here's how you need to stage the house. Number one, and no pictures. That's an obvious one because, I mean, of course, you think people are going to see candids of Cody Brown on the walls. That's going to scare people off for sure. Number two, they have to fix the cabinets that they managed to fucking destroy within, what have they been there, like 3, 4, 5 years? And for God's sake, patch up the fucking dents in the drywall. I actually noticed the third or fourth item on the list, and that was Christine's sink. She said, oh, it's a little loose. I need to fix that up. But I noticed it a couple weeks ago and I knew something's up with that sink. They probably need to caulk it or something because she had several towels folded up behind the faucet. So, you know, she's just been fucking up the countertops underneath it, probably rotting out her cabinets underneath. Oh, God. I mean, do you know how bad that would stink? It probably would smell like, you know, rotting fish. Catfish! Mary was catfished. And now she needs to rebuild her relationship with Cody. Oh, yes, we can never escape the Flagstaff and the Mary never leaving the family, right? Oh, I shouldn't say that. I almost caught myself. She never had any intention. She just really, really likes to eat bananas. So yes, we are on a road trip, and what better time, what better people to put together than Cody and Mary? I bet they have a ton to talk about. Maybe they talk about which spray gel they use, what kind of mousse they both like for sprunching these days. Or, you know what? Maybe I'm being too hard on Cody, you think? I mean, he is a man of honor and faith, and that's surely why he and Mary didn't even share a bed at the hotel in Flagstaff. I mean, you wouldn't want to share DNA in a kiss or anything, because they are, after all, a divorced couple. It's like part of his rules for uncoupled men and women. They're taking it slow. It's actually a good thing for their marriage for them to be as far apart in distance as possible. You guys all get it, right? Oh, God. Honestly, that was actually really, really awkward. I felt bad for Mary, and I never feel bad for Mary, but you could tell she knew she was busted in that scene. I loved the next scene where Cody starts to get annoyed with Mary. And I mean, of course he does. That's nothing new. But we got a glimpse of how their couples therapy sessions go and really what their root issue is when they were driving together. Because Mary kind of lightheartedly jokes about Cody using two hands to drive, and that's why he won't hold her hand. And then Cody says something about being safe, and then quickly, don't be a victim. Yeah, we saw that. We heard it, Cody. Yeah, over and out, loud and clear. We all agree. Now, I'm not even going to talk about this one house as opposed to four separate houses for the wives, because I am convinced it is all bullshit. Cody needs a storyline of his own, and I think this is just, it's a sack of crap. I don't believe it for a second he actually wants to have them all live in one house. So let's jump to the second hour, and Aspen and Mitch go to Bagpipe Bob's basement. They listen to some tunes, yay, and then they go cake tasting, and Aspen tells everyone to just zip their lips because it's her wedding and she just wants them to attend so they can all, I don't know, sign their checks that they have to sign. It's just stupid. Now, in light of zooming past this scene because it was totally boring, I want to ask you a question. I've been making a lot of growth in this area, talking about sex and sexual things. You might have noticed earlier, actually dropped the S-E-X word. My mind started wondering, as it does when I watch this, and I started thinking, what is sex like with Aspen and Mitch? You probably were thinking it too, and you're like, oh my God, Jody, are you reading my mind? I don't think that they've had sex, but I think I'm going to make a prediction. I think he probably wears a kilt during it. He definitely wears a t-shirt during. Like, I don't think he ever gets naked. He's probably a never nude, kind of like me, but I'm thinking it's not even like a white under t-shirt. Like, he may have a Gary Shirley from Teen Mom Belden lineman camp t-shirt that's especially for that intimate time. Am I thinking way too deeply into this? That's what she said. I think I am, but I'm just wondering what you guys think. I also wonder, this didn't come to my mind as I was watching the show, but rather this morning before I was recording, do you think, because, you know, living in close proximity and sometimes sharing a home with each other, do you think sister wives fart in front of each other? Or do you think that is sacred to their individual marriages? Okay, just think about it and let me know what you think. Now, let's see, where were we? Oh, right, okay. Flagstaff. Mary and Cody, they're going to see some land. Mary likes cottonwood, and turns out cottonwood is not the same piece of land that Christine and Robin loved. And this is where I immediately started thinking, oh, great, this is going to be our storyline for the next several years. I think Mary is purposely not going to like Coyote Pass because she knows she's probably going to be outvoted, and then it's going to give her something to whine about and use as a victim complex for the rest of their lives. Well, you know what this means with all these disagreements. Time for a family meeting. So Cody announces that the whole family is going to go to Flagstaff again, and they're going to look at the two properties and decide. St. Dayton is going to go to Northern Arizona University. Yay for Dayton. He's one of the kids that we like. He's all in. He doesn't really care where they're moving because he's going to be local no matter what. Now, all the kids seem to be on board, varying levels there, except for Gabriel. Poor Gabe is the new hunter, and I feel badly for him, and I actually agree with him. Yes, he's got some teenage emotions wrapped up in it that may not be completely true or logical, but he is right that there really doesn't seem to be a point in moving if they're just going to go deeper in debt than they're in right now. I don't really understand the whole thing, but you know, once Cody has his mind set on something, he just goes for it, much like the reverse mullet that he's going for right now. All right, let's take a very quick break and let's jump into some Seeking Sister Wife. First up are the Snowdens. I really wish I could just delete these assholes from the lineup, but you know, then I couldn't pepper you with facts about the random objects the Snowdens own. You're gonna love this one. Fun fact, my partner in marriage and mortgage knows all about military vehicles because, I don't know, it's kind of his job. Without going into all the super boring details, just so you know, because I found Dimitri's gloating quite hilarious, you know that vintage military truck he kept because he clearly didn't want to suffer a cross-country drive with his wife and kids, so instead of he made Vanessa do it? Well, yeah. That big beast of a vehicle is called an M9, and it only costs between $6,000 to $10,000, $7,500 straight from a dealer today. Now, I'm not saying $6,000 to $10,000 is chump change, but not only myself, but like I said, Dave was just finding it kind of funny that Dimitri was smiling, that big old smugly grin he has. He's trying to make it seem like this vehicle of his, like he was on MTV Cribs or some shit. Like, okay, settle down. Probably all of us could get even a loan to purchase that thing. It's just, oh my God, he's just such a fucking asshole. Now, I'd love to know what the real timeline of this Los Angeles move was because it just doesn't add up. Ashley made it sound like they bought the house in Los Angeles and then just drove on out to move in, but oh, weird, oops, it's so strange that someone else actually bought the house out from underneath us. It just doesn't quite work like that. And also six people, three of them being small kids in a double queen hotel room at the Marriott. No, I'm not buying it. Something is not adding up here, but whatever. Fast forward to move-in day, and turns out Vanessa, she's not only a long-distance Uber driver and babysitter, she's also a professional mover. Fucking Ashley couldn't put that baby down in like a bouncer or something for a few minutes. No, of course she can't because she needs to supervise as Vanessa hoists her ass up into that M9 and unloads heavy carton after heavy carton to Dimitri, who's just kind of like scooching them into the front hallway. Jesus fucking Christ, these people are the worst. And then Vanessa doesn't even get the nice bedroom after all the hassle that she's been through, having to quit her job, move in with a family, move to a new city. No. Ashley says it was Vanessa who gave her the master bedroom because, I mean, come on, let's face it. Ashley has it tough. She's got to share the room with little Candida and Dimitri. And, you know, once she decides that Vanessa's vagina is worthy of receiving Dimitri, then she'll send Dimitri down to that little room and he can lay with her every so often. You know, it's just very Snowden-esque, right? It's just a perfect balance. It's a family with a tribe of women built on love and equality. And you know, it's not about judgment or giving permission to Vanessa and Dimitri. It's about sexual health. Let's talk about this, okay? Ashley is just concerned. It's about love and concern about the pH of Vanessa's vagina. She's a good friend, you guys. She's a good sister. You know how we are. We're always looking out for each other's vaginal pH. You guys do this, right, with your besties? You put them on a 21-day detox just to make sure that they don't pass things to each other with you. I mean, what the fuck? I could not even believe they were thinking this and also putting it out in public on TV. How the fuck Ashley can call herself a cheerleader or a feminist or whatever you want to call it, and then go and dictate how another woman has to go and take care of herself and her body? Absolutely not. She's got to fuck off with that. I know it's all up to Vanessa, and if Vanessa's okay with it, then it shouldn't matter, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just saying, my opinion is I don't like it. I don't think Ashley should have any say in what Vanessa is putting in her body, talking about food or Dimitri. Ugh. But I mean, what the fuck? Would Ashley be the type of person that would do something Vanessa told her to do? Absolutely not. Okay, how many times did I say absolute and fuck? I don't know, but it's a lot. And so is Ashley's ego and Dimitri, of course. Now let's talk about Bernie and Paige McGee and these little McGee boys. I love them. I don't want them to have to see all this fucking weird stuff going on with their mom and dad and telling them everything that's going on. I just think it's weird. And I'm not saying polygamy is weird. You know, whatever you want to do in your bedroom or who you're married to, I don't really care. I mean, it's your life. Make your life what you want. It's none of my business. But if you have teenage kids or tweens, especially that age, you can't think that they're just going to be all like Brady Bunch and yay, mom and dad, let's have someone jump into our lives right in the middle of it. Kids are going to have issues with it, right? I mean, if the McGee boys are weirded out by it, they're in a really bad position, because even if they're honest with their parents that, yeah, mom, you know what? I do feel weird about it. Are Paige and Bernie really going to stop and not pursue polygamy? No, no, no. It's like they're asking their kids, the teen moms do this a lot too. They're asking their kids if they're okay with it, but it's not a genuine question. If their kids disapproved or said no, they're going to be ignored. So, you know, why even ask them? It's like a weird mind fuck thing to do with your kids. Just don't do it. And also, don't cut meat and tomatoes like the McGees, that food preparation scene, Bernie manhandling raw chicken, and just the brutalization of that beefsteak tomato. It was a lot. If Bernie handles his women the way he handles his meat, well, oh, speaking of the devil, here comes Brandy and her daughter Brie. In a very bachelorette-like edit, Brandy rolls her ankle out of this town car and goes up and rings the doorbell. Lots of, you know, Cherokee for Coles hugs go around and the families meet. You know, it would have been bad if it went horribly and Brandy then had to stay at their house with her daughter. I think it probably would have been a better idea if it just was Bernie, Paige, and Brandy. But so far, so good. And Brandy thinks Bernie is attractive, so maybe it'll all work out. Well, welcome back, Aldridges. They're back after a week off. And what's that, Charisse? Is this too big around, or... Okay, Charisse, well, you've been sleeping with the old fella for 5 or 6 years, so who the hell you asking? Okay, enough about Charisse's love for working with Jeff and his wood. What is going on with Jennifer? Last we heard, Jennifer had a family emergency and had to bail on giving Vanessa a manicure and working out that kink in Charisse's bunion. But to all of our surprise, Jennifer has been following up and calling them, talking all the time, and everything seems back to normal. Jeff swings on his tree swing, you know, like most guys do after a long day. Just get on that swing and pump all that stress away. Well, hopefully there won't be too much more stress, because they're going to ask Jennifer to come out to the homestead so she can see how they live. Over the saddest birthday celebration I've ever seen since my own family forgot about my 16th birthday, true story, the Aldridges throw some Aldi bucket of ice cream, I know it when I see it, down on the table, And they tell Delanor, his or her, not quite sure if Delanor is a boy or a girl, but they tell him or her that their birthday wish is not going to come true just yet because, you know, he or she has six siblings and nobody has time for that. But guess what? Dad paid for a round-trip ticket for Jennifer to come. Yay! Said no one except Charisse. Also, true story. Next up, the Winders. Way to zoom in on that cute camera person. I like your style. Now, as a reminder, Colton and second wife Sophie are like full speed ahead on the recruiting a third wife thing. First wife Tammy says she'll look for a third wife as long as the woman will be a good fit to be goddesses with them in the afterlife and with Tracy, of course. Now, I guess goddesses love finding each other online because they found a few to message after a thrilling morning of little Sadie pulling some truly sassy moves in the cucumber patch. Now, to be honest, I actually do think that this family needs to add some more kids in the mix because that little Sadie, having three adults following her around all the time, just at her beck and call, giggling at unfunny jokes and at Sadie's very simple observations like, I'm not thirsty. That shit right there creates monsters. Truly, trust me on this, truly, it does. I also want to draw attention to the fact that this family exclusively eats and drinks out of the children's play setting from IKEA. I don't know if it's because they keep an extra set around for Sophie's mom in case she comes or, you know, someone else who may not have teeth. I'm actually just completely confused with the entire life of Sophie. I really want to go back to like day one. Of course, we have no teeth mother April, but we also have Sophie living in this weird room, okay? She's got a separate house, but in her bedroom that's got a queen bed, she also has a massive lazy boy recliner and a couch. So I started questioning myself, you know, maybe she just rents a room from someone because Colton and Tammy already have that house with little mini Truly Brown. But last week, remember, Sophie was showing off her new puffy leather couches to the gaming brother. I don't know. I don't even know where to prioritize what I want to know first with the Winders. I think they absolutely need a second season. Okay, well, that does it for this week. Thank you guys for joining me once again. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at RealityTVPod. This week on Patreon, I'll be talking about my artsy-fartsy weekend in the city. And let's see, Amanda and Jody, patreon.com/AmandaandJody for Total Request Podcast. We are breaking down the office dinner party this week. It's pretty damn amazing. And Moms on the Rocks, as always, join us over there. We're always laughing, having a great time. And until next week, you guys, remember, stay salty.